Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. It's your girl, Jacqueline, and we're here with another episode to kick off the Christmas season. Mariah Carey is in her full bag, ladies and gentlemen, and we are here with a family-friendly film that we feel the critics were a little bit unfair to. I'm so excited to have my co-host along with me again today, Mr. Mark Ellisor. I know this is right around the time where your Amazon wish lists start coming over.
Yeah,
right?
I'm so bad at putting together. My mom will text me without fail, like, December 1st. And she's like, okay, Santa's on the line. What do you like? And I'm like, I like socks now. Like, I'm at that age where the stuff that I hated getting as a kid is the stuff I need now. Wow. So my mom hooks me up with socks. She hooks me up with...
She needs to get you some shirts this year, then. Tell her the t-shirts.
I'm not big on t-shirts.
You have to wear sleeves.
She's going to give me one big Wake Forest sweatshirt, and that's going to carry me through to next year.
You have to wear sleeves that are not part of a hoodie. I think our guest, who is looking very dapper next to him, will agree. Of course, this is our man, Tony Baker, joining us today to talk about Family Man with Nicolas Cage. Tony, sir, welcome to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. Glad to have you here to talk about it as a family man yourself.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here. It's good to be back in the Rotten Tomatoes mix.
Good to see you in person as opposed onto my TV.
Right.
Anytime I'm watching the games, like, Tony's on every other commercial. He's
pretty
popping
much
up. Yeah, he's an omnipresent force in my life, even when we haven't seen each other
in a while. The man is working, which we're going to talk about another man working in this one. That, of course, is the 2000, I would say, dramedy, cult classic a little bit. There's a lot of folks that are fan of this one. It's 53% rotten on the tomato meter, but it has a 67% audience score. It's a Nick Cage movie, so of course it's going to be on our editorial feature. Nick Cage movies ranked. It is on the lower side at the 53%, ranked at number 47. The very bottom one is Left Behind at 93. That was part of likely the Nicolas Cage trying to pay off the tax man phase. But number one at 97% is a movie that I love, but the person who lives in my house is not a fan of, and that's Pig from 2021. It's also on the 150 best Christmas movies of all time. Number one on that one is Clang, Clang, Clang with the Trolley and Meet Me in St. Louis. Family Man is ranked at number 107.
Oh, it couldn't break the top 100 Christmas movies.
At least it's on the list. Like, let's be real. Christmas movies run deep. We could name at least 20 banger ones, and we are a firm believer that Die Hard is on the list, and
yes,
I know for a fact Die Hard ranks higher than this.
And Die Hard 2.
And Die Hard 2.
Mm-hmm. I want to see this little Meet Me in St. Louis from 1944. How is it better than Die Hard?
You do not come for Judy Garland. Like, I'm glad you're here, but you are a guest of this house.
It's 44, man. You probably didn't even talk normal then.
The gays are going to come for you, sir. You need to leave that one alone.
Well,
that
say, she's a leggy chain. I wonder what she's doing this holiday season.
Gee, Willikers. Hey, what's going on here, Santa? What's the big idea?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
There's probably like 10 critics that reviewed that.
No, oh my God, the TCM crowd is going to come through this microphone and stab you both. But before we have them do that, I will go ahead and just at least start off with a place where I think we should, which is, Mark, can you at least tell us a little bit about Family Man, because this is a movie that involves, I don't even know what I'm going to call it, time travel?
I've been waiting for this. This is almost like alternate universe kind of stuff. Yeah. Because Nicolas Cage plays a man who is very successful and very without a family at the outset of this movie. So you can kind of look at this as Christmas Carol with a little bit of Through the Looking Glass with it, because
It's a Wonderful Life-ish.
A Wonderful Life, for sure.
It's a Wonderful Life as well. Because
in reverse.
It's about the choices that you didn't make. It's about the alternative steps you could have taken in your life and where that would have landed you, where you get a glimpse as our character, who is sort of the Clarence, the angel of this story, played by Don Cheadle, introduces Nick Cage by a weird incident at a convenience store on Christmas Eve that, hey, you know what? I'm going to show you what your life could have been like. So Nicolas Cage goes to bed in his nice New York City high rise by himself the way he likes it, and he wakes up, and who is he in bed with? Taya Leone. And who comes in the room? Two kids and a huge dog. Oh my God, he's been married to his sweetheart for 15 years, as opposed to the decision he actually made where he got on the plane and he didn't come back for her. So now he has to live this life knowing what he knows about his other life. And he's like, I don't belong here. I'm going to go back to my nice little, but wait, now this family is starting to grow me a little bit. And I meet the neighbor. And, this is a community. And it's a very different life than I thought I'd have. I work at a tire store and I'm just selling tires at retail. But I kind of feel a connection to this family and this woman that I've loved my whole life, never stopped loving her. What's going to happen? Is she going to feel the same way about him back in this other world? It's a collision of universes and feelings and emotion. And the perfect time to do all that is the season of giving.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, this one definitely puts you in the feels. If you have a family that you like, this will be the movie that makes you, like, not take them for granted, which is amazing. Tony, I'm going to start with you just real quick, because we're going to dive deep in movie talk. But before we get there, if you can just tell me, is Rotten Tomatoes wrong? Like, how do you feel about this, having just watched it?
I'm not surprised that they didn't like it, just because critics can be harsh on good stuff. Like, if it's too, you know, on the nose with the, you know, the messaging, like, yeah, I don't like it. You know, critical snobs. Because, you know, It's a Wonderful Life bombed when it came out.
That is true. Yeah.
So
that
it's
is
like, they
true.
Don't appreciate what's good. But when Family Man came out, I remember it doing well at the box office. It had good legs.
Mm-hmm.
It made like 70-something million. The budget was high, but it still did better than anticipated.
Yeah.
No.
And so
made his money back.
That proved that, you know, audience is like, I like this.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, so I'm not surprised. And they're tough on Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. This was also in the $20 million Nicolas Cage realm, too. I should be very clear. This is when he started making his bigger paycheck.
He had become an action star off of The Rock in the mid-90s and Con Air and Gone in 60 Face Seconds off. And stuff like that.
Yeah.
And something that I noticed, because I haven't seen this movie in a minute. I came to this movie late, but I hadn't seen it in a minute. The first scene of him where he's just walking around in his skivvies and he's got he's pretty built. And I'm like, this dude's definitely been working out. Then it hit me and I was like, oh my God, he's in Superman shape right now.
Yeah.
He was about to play Superman in Tim Burton's Superman Lives. And then our late great buddy John Schnapp made the documentary, The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened, about how the fallout of that. But it's like you're watching it and oh my God, this guy's about to play Clark Kent. No one, and he's also like a rich single dude who basically he works hard and then he works out hard and then he hooks up hard.
Yeah,
and
it fits in at the time. I think he had just maybe worked with Scorsese at this time, too, because he had just recently maybe done Bring Out the Dead, or he's about to do Bring Out the Dead. It's somewhere
like
around this time. He loved it. He counts that as one of his top five.
Does?
Nicolas Cage.
Oh,
Nicolas
okay.
Cage does.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and find out what the critics were saying at the time. I hope that Tim is not as maybe as forceful as Tony. Let's hope we got good vibes for this one and see what the critics were saying in our segment we like to call 2 Minutes with Tim.
2 Minutes with Tim.
Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life is the rarely disputed choice for the greatest Christmas movie of all time. And when people say a movie is Capra-esque, what they're describing is a kind of old-fashioned feel-good tale of the little guy sticking up for good old American values. In other words, It's a Wonderful Life in its broad outline. But if you're watching it for the first time, you're likely to be taken aback by how dark much of it is. There are moments in It's a Wonderful Life that are as tough and despairing as any film noir of its era. This is a movie that earns its happy ending. It was inevitable that The Family Man would draw comparisons to It's a Wonderful Life. It's another holiday tale about a man who, through traumatic supernatural means, gets to see an alternate version of his world. But critics were largely mixed, with many finding it more schmaltzy and calculated than heartfelt, and others enjoying the strong chemistry between Nicolas Cage and Tia Leone. The Family Man is rotten at 53% on the tomato meter with 130 reviews, and it has a 67% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, Joe Layden of Variety called The Family Man a slickly produced slice of sentimental hokum that borrows freely from a half dozen or so other, better feel-good fantasies. However, in a fresh review, Paul Clinton of CNN.com wrote, "Yes, this movie is schmaltzy, but so what? It's also heartfelt, a great date movie, and perfect for the holidays." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "The Family Man's earnest attempt to remind audiences that It's a Wonderful Life too often steers into schmaltz, although Nicolas Cage and Tia Leone's romantic rapport adds a dash of sincere sweetness." So that's The Family Man. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night. Back to you, folks.
Just like our little Tiny Tim. I love it. So great.
I kind of like schmaltz. I take this even a step further than Tony. I think this definitely is a fresh movie. I think Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. And I feel like you have the same inkling as I do.
Yes. I was going to say, I completely forgot to ask both me and Mark on what we wanted to do.
I wanted to hear what Tim said before I went.
I did. I really did,
we
too.
Went Tony
I wanted
open
to get
and...
there. I think for me, it's about right. Like, it's about right.
At 53?
At 53. Like, I'm not, like, warming up out of bed with this. I had a really great time with it. This is a joke that has one bit, and they ring that bit until the end. And it's cute, but it's not like it goes anyplace. It's, you know what I mean? Like, the what you want is what you get. The guy doesn't take his life for granted. There's a little bit of a twist at the end that keeps you kind of interested.
Yeah.
But I
like a movie like this because it keeps us talking about what does happen. I kind of want a fan fiction where they go from here a little bit, where the movie leaves off, you know? And I like when something does that. Like, you see a movie in the theater, like, if three of us go to see Family Man, and then we go get something to eat or have a drink afterwards, and we're all talking about, like, what else could have happened.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the vibes that I like with this movie.
Again, it's not that it's bad schmaltz. It's just not schmaltz I particularly think is that great. There's better schmaltzy stuff. Like, What's Eating Gilbert Grape is schmaltz to a certain extent, and it's better than this. Like, because he takes his family for granted, and then eventually he loves it.
Very different, but I see what you're saying. Different, way different movie, but I get it.
Anyway.
And for me, it's like, you know, 53%. It could go up to 60.
It could
be 60.
Get it to fresh.
I think it could be a low fresh.
Okay.
But it's not like... You know, it wasn't amazing. It wasn't like I left the theater like, oh, okay, that was cute.
Do you like this better than Son-in-Law, which was our last like sort of holiday movie? That's what I'm like. You got to like have this
I
is me
this
being
is...
like Christian towards you again, where I'm like getting you to compare your things. So I apologize for being this toxic, but I'm like, come on, this is
I kind of
cheesy.
I'm a sucker for any sort of Christmas Carol-esque story.
I love
and
Christmas
so
Carol.
I feel like this has a little bit more of that. And this opens a gateway to introduce new generations to the Frank Capra stuff and like It's a Wonderful Life, things like that. So I feel like Nicolas Cage is a nice gateway to get to Jimmy Stewart. So I think I kind of like this a little more than Son-in-Law. Sorry, Polly, I love you.
We'll get into this in movie talk, but I just think I'm at a different point in my journey. I can't. I look at families as dangerous entities that it's almost like an MLN that they're trying to like draft other people into. The oldest MLM is motherhood and families.
I'm not
going to let you come at me like this is Beachbody or Monette. Like, I don't care. I don't want to subscribe. And movies like this are the gateway drug. So I look at them like...
I have a retort that I will issue on the other side of
yes, this. Let's talk about it when we get into movie talk. Brian, cue the music.
We're going to need Tony the Family Man to break us up here, Jacqueline.
Look, let's start with let's actually have a palate cleanser first, because before we get into the deep of it, because I know this is going to like cause issues, because again, Mark is a man who literally travels around the country to see his family at Christmas. And I pretend like you need to put out a wanted poster. So we are definitely on opposite sides of the spectrum when it comes to this. But let's start
with... Jack, we're coming home for Christmas. Put her on the milk carton now. It's July. Put her on the milk carton now. We'll see if we can
so
get her
she's
home.
She's not pulling up on the family this holiday season. That's you.
Let's move on to whether or not you're a fan of Christmas. I am a fan of Christmas movies. But as I will state in this, I like the dysfunctional ones. I like the ones that it's like, let's like, you know, give me some mixed nuts. Give me some home for the holidays. Give me the type of family where you got to like bite your tongue in between. You know what I mean? The family stone.
I was just going to say family stone.
Like give me that. Give me a meshment. Give me John McClane can't talk to his wife, but he's going to pick up a gun. I am
That's
there.
The
Enjoy
Christmas
it.
Movie right
you know
there.
What I mean?
Die Hard really is.
It's the best.
Or the Goblet of Fire where they leave the poor boy abandoned at Hogwarts. I think that one's done it like Christmassy. Like people feel like Goblet of Fire is like a low-key Christmas movie because that was the year that he stayed and like they had Christmas there. Or was that Chamber of Secrets where they were in
I
trouble?
I feel like all of them are Christmas
All
movies.
Of them are like
they
that, but...
They just felt like Christmas.
Hogwarts has a Christmassy vibe. You get a frozen butterbeer and you kind of walk around. But
even
on that note...
Even Frozen, that family's more realistic than the crap they're pulling in this.
This movie, it's kind of like the Harry Potter where like you're staying over at school, that movie with Paul Giamatti. I haven't seen yet, The Holdover.
Holdover is amazing. Yeah.
Rave reviews. Yeah. And I kind of like those dysfunctional Christmas movies too.
Yeah.
There's also a soft spot in my heart for the elf, that's of the world. Garfield's Christmas is one of the best Christmas tales I've ever seen. But it all, again, goes back to me, either A Christmas Carol with like George C. Scott or Patrick Stewart or Scrooge with Bill Murray.
Scrooge.
Oh, I love Scrooge.
Dysfunctional, though.
I love
very dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And
I like
I'm
the
about
dysfunction.
It.
I mean, on Christmas Vacation is probably one of my favorite.
Another one. Yeah.
And it was just disastrous.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
But it's funny to think about those two movies, right? Because you're looking at Ebenezer Scrooge and a more modern Scrooge like Frank Cross's, played by Bill Murray in Scrooge, where he's looking at this alternate version of his life that would have been like the Griswolds, where like you're sacrificing a lot of income and a lot of work and like a lot of material possessions for this nice middle-class family situation that, you know, Clark's just hoping on his Christmas bonus, the same way that anybody who lives in the neighborhood of Nick Cage and Tay Leone once they get into that situation, they're kind of the same way.
Yeah.
So it's like it's fun watching them just get by, just struggle to make it, but they do it with a smile on their face and with a song in their heart. And I think that's where a lot of the critics go, the schmaltz.
You do need to see The Holdovers. It, again, is more my brand of dysfunction rather than the schmaltzy side of it. But I will also say, too, The Descendants, which is Hawaii Christmas.
Oh,
where mom,
George Clooney.
Yeah, where mom gets found out to be...
That's a Christmas movie.
Because she's coming home for Christmas, remember?
That's right.
Anyway, so I will say, those are the type of Christmas movies I like. Yeah. The other ones, the cynic in me is like, this is a scam.
I got beef with one element in this movie, man.
What is it?
Like when he tried to go back to New York and do something that he loved to do, she kind of shot it down. I didn't like that.
He
don't want to sell tires.
In this movie, there's a couple times when wifey's a little, I mean, look, I give Tay Leone a lot of credit. For multiple reasons. Because, again, I am like Nick Cage when he wakes up at the beginning of this movie. Like, that's my Nick Cage. That's kind of me. I like being by myself.
Yeah.
You know, you might have romantic dalliance and goes nowhere every so often.
Right.
I'm kind of Nick Cage in this movie, right? a few zeros in the bank account less, but I'm Nick Cage in this movie. Then he wakes up and it's like nothing about this situation I want. I don't want these kids. Who's this dog I have to walk every morning?
Yeah.
Who are these friends? But I'm married to Tay Leone and who plays Kate in this movie. And that's what a selling point that is.
Yeah.
So whatever that woman told me to do, as much as I love to be independent, just sit and like get high with my dog after the end of the night. If Tay Leone comes into life and she's like, hey, you need to do this and this and this and stop doing this and this and this.
I want to do what I love to do for a living.
But wait a minute though, Tony. Like, again, I'm not trying to say that you're wrong on the reaction or the defensiveness of it, but like, let's be real.
Mm-hmm.
The reality of her being supportive of that, what reality does that leave for her? That means that everything that she's doing, which is already tough. I mean, the first moment of the movie, she's like busting in on him like, oh, my God, I got to pee. I need to get away from the kids for 2 seconds. Here, take this. You know what I mean? This is clearly a frazzled, overworked mom who, although she is not the businesswoman that we meet at the beginning of the thing, that
pro
chick
bono.
Is still in there. And so you don't think she wakes up some morning wanting to be in Midtown Manhattan taking martinis at lunch? And so like him asking that, like, wouldn't you be like, be for real?
But now it's like, at least let him attempt.
Attempting, what is her world going to be like? I'm also saying this to a man who leaves 4 days out of the week, so I don't feel like I'm talking to the right audience.
Because I'm a firm believer, you got to do what you love to do in life.
Fair.
And, you know, some people can balance family and that at the same time, and I know it's a struggle, but you know.
I know she got blindsided by this decision, right?
It was a big decision.
Right.
No.
Because basically, this is the point of the movie where he started to embrace who he is mm-hmm. and that he is this family man and that this is sort of something that he did want for a long time.
Yeah.
Right. He's married to the person he's never not been in love with. And then, mm-hmm. you know, you come with the kids and the kids are okay. And I kind of like walking the dog after a while and whatever.
Right.
So he's accepted that. But then he gets this out of the blue opportunity to yeah. prove how talented he is in this other world and to take his family with him. I mean, again, I'm all for Kate saying, like, what the hell are you doing? Moving our family to New York? This is crazy.
That's
no, we're
step.
Not doing it. Then he drops the bomb. It's going to be double the paycheck.
Yeah.
And I get a big Christmas bonus. Come it's on. Guaranteed, unlike Clark Griswold. And it's like, we got to at least think about it.
Come
There's
on.
A conversation yeah. you have.
His family's again, in New York City.
Not going to pretend that it was not something to be contemplated, but let's not keep it real. What life, the life changes. The life changes for her
that's
at the
change.
End of that. And I'm not saying that's nanny money. We're not saying that's nanny money because I would be like, is that nanny money? In which case, let's pack up the kids and
that's
let's go.
That's definitely nanny right. money.
But just
this is 2000. It was before the first economic downturn. You're probably right. It is
yeah,
nanny turn.
Yeah,
they could buy a condo for $100,000.
This movie does such a great job, though. And something we were talking about right before we hit play on this stuff is like, It does such a great job of painting the picture of how a single bachelor dude lives in the city
yeah.
and how non-conducive that is to raising a family. Just the environment that he wakes up in mm. where it's just cold, static, you know, yeah. the setup exactly the way he likes. But you take a kid in there and they're bored out of their mind.
Oh,
there's
sure.
like
yeah.
nothing to do. 100%. There's hazards everywhere. There's sharp corners. And it's like this is the antithesis of the family home mm. where we can move in and grow old together. And this is leaking and that's broken, but it's ours.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Tony, I'm going to talk to you. This is why I think the movie is fine where it is, and I'm going to ask you. Just name some of the movies that you notice this movie rips off in it.
Oh.
Because as you were talking about that, I thought of like three more. So we know it's like, you know, It's a Wonderful Life,
uh-huh.
very similar. But there's
yeah.
more. Like yeah. I got one, 17 Again. There you go.
Oh, wow.
Didn't rip it off because it's after, but like very similar, like that vibe of like,
oh, yeah,
big, like, you know, going back in time.
Yeah. Sure.
Vice versa.
Freaky
Friday.
Perfect example. What else? What else mm-hmm. we got that it robs from? There's like a ton.
There's been movies that have Switch. Come out since then.
No, there's ones that
like,
before.
You know.
American Psycho, because his
Whoa.
Opening office. Tell me that's not Patrick Bateman's lair.
Wow.
Tell me
American
that's not Patrick
Psycho?
Bateman's lair.
He does
Paul Allen's card?
A very American Psycho. This guy listens to Huey Lewis. I'll say
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So like
that's
again,
wild.
Like look at, and then we said A Wonderful Life. We said that. Also A Christmas Story. Ebenezer Scrooge and like going to see his different versions of his
oh,
life.
Oh, it's definitely A Christmas Carol.
Yeah,
oh, for
like
sure.
Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
I said
Purposely.
A Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How many other movies does this thing rip off? That's why I can't like give it. It's kind of a Franken Christmas.
I think the thing that separates it is, and even the critics who lambasted this movie, who gave it a rotten review,
mm.
even they had to admit that the chemistry between
yes.
Cage and Leone is what sells this movie.
Facts.
And I think that that's the attraction for somebody coming at it like me, who historically is not a relationship guy. Like, my record is 2 years, okay?
Oh,
I
wow.
achieved that in college, and I achieved that with Molly's mom. And since 2017, it's been pretty much on my own. Now, there's been instances and there's been like datings and stuff like
that.
Since I actually had a girlfriend, yeah. And I don't feel sad about it at all. I actually kind of love it. But there is this, there's this allure to having somebody, to having like a teammate in life. Mm-hmm. And that's who these folks are. Like you can tell, obviously you can tell that they're in love. And and I love any movie, which again, this does borrow from a few. Any of those rom-coms where at the end, it's like, she's at the airport. I got to catch her. Can I get there?
Oh,
and Tony plays the cabbie. I'll get you there in 20 minutes, Jack. And you know, it's like you hope that you can make that work because you love this person so much.
Yeah.
I don't know that person's out there for me, but the just the alternate universe aspect of it, I think is appealing. I think it's fun sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's usually around the holidays.
Yeah.
You just sit and you're like, where else could my life have gone if I had taken that internship? If I didn't decide to pick up a microphone in front of people, mm-hmm. where could my life have gone? Mm-hmm. And that generally leads me down the road of, I probably would have been settled with a family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, do you, this is, I hate to say it, this is the midlife crisis movie though. And I really feel that I am in the wrong audience for this. Like, like me not like, this movie's not made for me. This movie's made for y'all. And this is like,
you met the right guys.
I feel like I am like a guy talking about Barbie right now and I should be out of this because in really truth, like, this movie was made for y'all, written by David and David, David Diamond and David Weissman. I have a feeling they were working some stuff out. Oh my God, I just saw who directed this.
Brett Ratner, baby.
No.
Uh-huh. Rush Hour.
This is definitely the midlife crisis movie. That dude.
With Brett Ratner doing it?
Brett Ratner.
I get it now. I know now why. By the way, I want everyone to please like hit us up if you think I'm right about this, because I really think I just cracked the case.
This is like a subdued Brett Ratner.
This being a middle-aged like dude's kind of, you know, not revenge movie, but just like, where else could my life have gone? Should I buy that sports car kind of thing?
Yeah.
Brian put a great nugget in here is that in our notes is that Nick Cage agreed to do this movie because he saw Rush Hour, was a huge fan of Rush Hour.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so that movie continues to have connective DNA with us here at Rotten Tomatoes, and especially the show Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. So that's a really funny thing. And like when this movie came out in December of 2000, and like how much, when you see the shots in New York City in this movie, how much our world was about to change.
Yeah.
And this, I think even more so in retrospect, knowing all that, it makes it feel like we're going back to a simpler time.
Yeah.
But you brought up Barbie, and you brought up how, you know, like, because I loved Barbie. I thought it was maybe the best movie I've seen this year.
Oh.
This feels like Barbie, too.
Yeah.
Because you're taking somebody out of their comfort zone, where Margot Robbie wakes up and she's in the Barbie dream house and she has this Barbie life and she knows Barbie things and that's her entire world and she loves it. And you put her in a different universe and she's like, I don't know how to feel, but maybe I do belong in this world.
Right.
Yeah. No one else it robs a little bit from Labyrinth, going to rescue the life that you abandoned. I'm telling you, man, this movie is just a Frankenstein movie of schmaltzy moments.
A lot of movies are
that. I know,
a lot of
but this one,
movies.
I just, it's so blatant.
Quentin Tarantino's
it's
whole
like,
catalog.
I don't disagree with you on that, but he puts some eloquence to it. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no eloquence to this one. There's a difference between a light touch on your booty at a party and grabbing, and this movie is grabbing for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. There has to be a scene you like in this movie, though.
I do like watching him as a fish out of water, as the, you know, whatever it is, as the guy that's waking up in the life. Like, basically, remember in The Change Up with Ryan Reynolds and Jason Bateman, mm-hmm. like all those moments where he is just out of his depth with a woman that is like, why don't you know how to do this? You've been doing this for 20 years. Those are all really funny. What about you, Tony? Do you have a favorite scene from this one?
I did like the chocolate cake scene because that was the moment where they really connected. You know what I'm saying? They were chasing each other for the cake and then there's food involved. And then, you know, that was the moment because, you know, he was out. He was 1 foot out. He was he was thinking about hooking up with that girl in the red dress. And Jeremy was like, what are you talking about, man? And so I feel like that was the moment of real connection with them on that, you know, aspect of it. And it was like, and just seeing that personality right there, I was like, I like this couple right here.
And we see them run the entire gamut of his character in that one scene, which is why it's so perfect, is because he comes home and all he's thinking about is that chocolate cake. Because as a single dude, nobody's stealing
my chocolate cake.
My fridge and whatever
that's
I ordered.
My life now.
Yeah, right. It's like whatever we grubbed up the night before is still going to be
it's
in
right there.
It's guaranteed.
Yeah,
and now this stranger is eating my chocolate cake, but you realize through in the span of watching her eat it and take it and this playful banner, I love her
Yeah.
Even more than I love this chocolate cake. And then we get a tease in 9.5 weeks. And then he says the wrong thing and realizes he's still out of his depth. And so we still have some work to do. That's a great, great scene. I love the Christmas Eve party scene.
Oh, yeah.
Because that is every Christmas Eve party that I went to growing up as a kid. My grandma threw like the big in town in Roebling, New Jersey, New Year's Eve party where like all the neighbors would come in, and it was not a big house. So it's like everybody's just kind of packed, but you're seeing relatives and you only see them that time of year. And you find these little corners where it's like, oh, I'm safe with you three. I can now I'm in a safe space. Yeah. It's like, you know, and the guy who's eating chicken wings, he's got his bypass in 2 days.
Oh,
and he's
man,
like,
for sure.
It's so, it just, it feels so like that small town.
Yeah.
Like, this should be Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
You know, that's.
Why are you doing that to
my
city?
I hate Green Bay.
That's what this feels like.
It does feel more like that. Are they in upstate New York when we
Jersey?
They're in Jersey.
Jersey, because they're hoping the Nets can turn it around with
Keith
Van Horn.
That's that Jersey. Definitely days right there. The one thing I will say about this, and you mentioned it too, is Jeremy being his thing. There's some great supporting cast in this, which also really sort of make this movie. Also, the kids are adorable.
Kids are great.
The kids were like really cute, but. The Jeremy Piven of it all, and we were talking about this the other day. You think this is his best, like...
This is apex Jeremy Piven, because he had such a great run of being the best friend in romantic comedies, whereas usually next to John Cusack, like Gross Point Blank or Serendipity, but he's also just great here when he shows up, and it's just like, he's just that perfect sort of second banana guy you can lean on in certain scenes, like the bowling alley scene, where he... has to do what he thinks is a solid for his friend, because his friend, who he's known, the Nick Cage that he's known this whole time, talked him out of a similar thing the year before of of not cheating. And like, again, it goes back to that. This is probably written by dudes going through their own midlife crisis.
Yeah,
for sure.
Again, I know that, like, it's like, oh, I get this, like, it's so not for me. And let me tell you, I was very entitled to this movie. I was like, I don't get this, why this works. I don't even remember that it was directed by Brett Ratner. I would have been harsher on it. I would have probably been harsher on it if I would have known that. I'm sorry, whatever. He started it. And everyone knows what he did.
You did not start it, Jacqueline.
He started it. Luckily, he's canceled, so I don't have to worry about it. The thing I will say about it is, the whole premise of this movie not being for me is because if I woke up with a whole family, although I would be upset about it, it wouldn't be like something where I was like, I don't know who this person is. I would be like, we made some poor choices, but I wouldn't like, you know, I take care of people now. You know what I mean? Like, it would suck, but I wouldn't like die about it. What would you do if you woke up?
Another fun question to ask is like, how would I handle that situation?
Yeah.
I think y'all both know how I would handle that situation. And I would do my job and I would suck it up and I would be the best goddamn small town dad. And I would love the kids and I would cherish my dog walks at night by myself. And I would love, worship my wife for the goddess that she is. And I'd be like, okay, this is it. This is it.
This is a lot you do.
But much in the same way that he had his attitude towards work, where he's like this, you know, he's working on this mega $1 billion deal in his other life. And now he's working as the assistant at Big Ed's Tires. I'm like, I'm getting to management, baby. I'm taking over this location. We're opening three new locations by this time next year. Because you have to understand what your lot in life is. And the fact that there's such a lack of the angel, of Don Cheadle's angel, in the meat of this movie, where like he wants him to show up and give him some sort of, hey, maybe you should walk over here, maybe you should check out what's going on here. He's pretty much figuring this thing out on its own.
For sure.
But that's why Don Cheadle's such a great book into this movie too.
Very true.
How would you handle waking up and being in that situation if you just came from like just comic on the road, then you wake up and boom, oh my God, I have a full-blown, as Gen Z calls it, a full-blown family.
Full-blown family. I would probably get used to it really quickly. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because I've already had experience with the wife from the past relationship. So I'm like, oh, we doing this. We did this. And the kids, you know, I'm great with kids. So it's like, but for me, the whole thing is the job. What am I doing for
what
living?
Are you doing to make it?
Because my dream in life personally, I always knew I was going to find love or a good mate. Like, I've never worried about that. Not to be cocky or anything like that,
hey,
but it's just like,
it's not cocky. I always knew
I would have a companion.
If you're listening to this show, you might want to fire up YouTube, because this is a catch right next to me.
Because it's like, you know I can find somebody because I vibe well. So for me, the scarier part of life for me is will I do something for a living that I enjoy? Mm-hmm. That was always like the dream for me. And so once I pull up the Big Al's tires, I'm just like, bruh. But like you said, if I could turn that business around and make it my own and put my stamp on it, and then we going global now, then I can live with Big Al's tires.
You will girl like, boss. You will both girl boss immediately.
Look, the job is crucial.
Yeah. We know the highest of highs. We know the high of having a great set, and you walk off stage and it's just like it all came together. I feel like we could simulate that. If you make a big snow tire sale and then you just go back and in my tiny little office, we open that bottle of Glenlivet he's hiding in his thing. And he's just like, you know, let's celebrate this way.
You can never accuse comedians of not being ambitious. Now, they maybe not ambitious about the that other people care about, but they're all ambitious because to just do that is such a grind. Like of you have been like meat ground on it. Like,
well,
so
I think the thing about comics and how they relate to this and being in that situation, waking up in this weird world where now all of a sudden you have all these responsibilities is that when you're a comic and you go somewhere on the road, you don't necessarily have say over how the crowd's going to be that night, over if the mic's even going to work. Is this plugged in? Is this going
to
work? Is somebody going
to
drop it?
Did they lie
somebody
to me?
Gonna spill a drink? Right. Somebody going to heckle? You have to suck at whatever situation you're in.
Yeah.
You have to suck it up and deliver for an hour.
Yeah.
And so with this, it's the rest of your life, but you're like, I have to make the best of this. So I just hope that occasionally I get to go home at the end of the night and the chocolate cake isn't eaten.
The chocolate cake.
Also, you're good improvisers, so you're going to amuse yourself.
For sure.
Within the absurdity of it, I will say on the other side of it, I would do it differently in the sense that I would look at this as a chance to just make this my game. I would Captain Fantastic. Like, I would take the kids out to the country and we would be homeschooled. Like, everybody already knows I am just like one global event away from like being the Unabomber, basically, without the propensity for violence. Yeah. Like, it is there. My desire to leave the world and grow shit in the dirt has been within me since I was a child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, since I was a child, I used to like say, I'm going to have a little farmer's market. We made mud stuff. Like, this is my stuff. Like, these are our crops. And I didn't need to do that. I was four.
You're a little Matt Damon making potatoes on Mars.
Right.
This is
these
the thing.
Are my crops.
This is definitely the thing. And so I know that's what I would do. I would get those kids to like Amish country and would make honey.
Pennsylvania.
And we would be the weird hippy dippy kids. Yeah. Like, I know that.
But what if your spouse is like, what are you doing?
Right.
I'm sure she would.
I know that they would. I'm sure it would be like that. But I can. But the whole point being is that you're saying we're going to give them a better life. The spouse I would have would be just as stressed as Tia Leone and be like, we're about to take all the stress away, baby. We're about to live a simpler life.
She has that card that she plays multiple times in this movie, though, where she's like, this is the life that we always dreamed about together, that, like, this is the house. She has this thing about, like, even if you gave her a crap ton of money and you could move to a nicer community within that and so, like, still keep your friends and stuff, she seems like she doesn't want it. She wants this house.
Yeah.
Even though it's not the biggest house, even though they can barely afford it, she wants this house. She wants this. Like, she wants things her way. She loves this life. She's fully embraced what it is. And so even if it's a better situation on paper, I don't think that Kate is going to be up for it.
Oh, no.
Well, this is the best part about living in the country. You can have that house for when you need it, but we will live away from insanity.
She really wants to be with these crops.
You can't be that stressed out with your existence and someone say, let's move to the country and like chill out and not have it be appealing. Like, let's be real. World events in the next year are going to make that house seem very less marketable. I guarantee you. That was the plan before 9/11. I bet you after 9/11, I could convince her to move with me to the country.
That's, I mean, yeah.
Oh, the 9/11
when this came out.
Again, world events.
Right.
World events. I do think it's funny that this movie was buried by Castaway.
Oh, yeah.
Castaway?
Yeah.
That's the life you want, though.
No.
You want the Wilson.
Oh, I want the Castaway life.
She wants the Wilson.
I'm right there with you.
I mean, but that's roughing it. I'm not trying to rough it. I'm trying to have access to Amazon. Let's be real.
If I had proof I could start a fire by myself, I'd be fine living like Castaway.
Were you not
a Boy
Scout?
My biggest worry about that is, like, can I start a fire?
I think we could.
It looks extremely difficult. I've never done it.
If only there was a game show that stranded people on an island and saw, oh, wait.
You should be on it. You should be on it. No, I don't know if I could do it now, but I know the stuff to make it happen. Like, I could go investigate how to do it. Yeah. Like the
From
various,
your crop growing experience.
Also, if I just had my, also, if I had my glasses, I could do it.
Oh, the glasses.
You could do it with your glasses.
Oh, with the magnification.
Yeah, you could do it with your glasses.
Good luck having those glasses survive the plane crash.
Fair.
Onto the life raft.
Fair.
Onto the miles. I hope a whale brought the glasses. Shut it out of its blowhole and landed on it.
Not going to pretend to that. But if we had sea glass, we could polish that down. You could make glass that way.
Castaway buried everything, though.
It was a huge movie. Yeah. This got buried by Castaway.
And What Women Want.
And What Women Want.
That was a big one, too.
Yeah.
That was a huge holiday hit.
I just remark the days where you could have three movies debut and everything in that list made over $100 million. It's crazy.
That is not
a thing.
Who's making money then?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a holiday season. That's the prime box office season, everybody can eat.
I will say this before we get out of here. I think I put it on the Disturbed one. Is there a holiday movie that's part of your staple? Is there a holiday movie that you try to see every year? Yeah. Which one is your holiday it's in your top rotation no matter what?
I have two, actually. Every Thanksgiving, I like to watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That's
already
great.
Already watched it this
Co-signed.
Year.
Co-signed. Yep.
Christmas Vacation.
Mm.
And I watch Home Alone 2 a lot. I like Home Alone 2 better than
the one with Trump, really?
Yeah. Wow. You just, all of that.
He's not
you just
the
threw
star
Trump
of the movie.
In there. I know, he just comes through
I just,
real
between
quick.
The two Home Alones, I'm going to pick the first one because he's, come on. It's the same
story. So you, just because Trump rolled through?
It's the same story.
It is the same
White
story,
boy.
But you got Tim Curry in the second one.
That is a fact. Doesn't discount that. The first one, you have the fake classic film movie, which I thought was a real movie for the entire time that I watched movie until I think we covered it and I found out it's a fake movie.
You get the sequel to that in Home Alone 2.
You do?
Because he plays it in the hotel room and freaks out Rob Schneider, too.
And the pranks are funnier to me in the second one. I laughed harder at the pranks.
If I've had a couple of pops in me, then I like Home Alone 2 better, only because the sticky bandits are hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And but if I'm watching it sober, I think the first Home Alone gets me in the feels a little more. And the second one, it actually hurts watching the stunts after a while. Kevin is, he's literally trying to murder these
for
people.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which he has every right to
every
do, but
right.
My God, I mean, after the first injury, these two should be in the blue tent in the NFL.
But why are they still coming back? That's my whole thing.
Because it's a kid.
There's
no way a kid
again,
can beat us.
After so many licks, you don't get them back.
Yeah.
You just laid out.
No, they know they have to take this kid out now because this kid is going through
be
puberty.
A mass
and
murderer.
We're turning this kid into Rambo.
Yeah, he's going to be a mass murderer. What's your, OG stunner.
My mom and I have kind of it's not a hate watch necessarily because there's parts of this movie we love, but we also love kind of mystery science theorying our way through Love Actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never seen that movie.
There's certain storylines that are so good and or funny and or touching, but then there's other ones where it's like, dude, this is creepy.
Yeah.
And this is so, but there's moments in it. There's moments, and you're going to know what's good and what's bad. Watch it. Watch it, and then hit me up after you do.
Because
I'm curious for, everybody has their own relationship with Love, Actually. And I also just love the house swapping of the holiday.
The house swap.
Yeah.
So
I
was going to say, the holiday is my very go-to one.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Bridget Jones's Diary that opens on New Year's Day, because I'm actually more of a Thanksgiving, New Year's Day girl.
I love Thanksgiving.
I love New Year's Day for Bridget Jones's Diary and also for The Apartment, which is a New Year's Eve movie. So I have those are my holiday movies. Mm. And I would say the holiday is the Christmas one. New Year's Eve is The Apartment. New Year's Day is Bridget Jones.
Okay. I mean, we know, clearly between the three of us, we know how to holiday correctly.
Yeah.
So
but there's not a Santa in sight.
We'll let Tony organize the Thanksgiving festivities next year. He seems to be championing
that.
We'll come to his
food.
Place and watch football.
Christmas.
I'll handle Christmas, and then Jacqueline gets to ring in the New Year.
Yeah. I will make it happen.
That's a good time right there.
I got Black Eyed Peas on deck. All right. That is going to be it for us
in
movie talk. Let's go ahead and get out of here. But before we do, Tony, I was going to go ahead and say, where can folks find you and what do you have going on next?
If you happen to be in the Tacoma, Seattle area, I will be out there December 7th through the 9th at Nate Jackson's Super Funny Comedy Club. I will also be in San Francisco the following weekend at Cobb's Comedy Club. And then I will round out New Year's Eve weekend in Orlando for two nights, and then New Year's Eve in Tampa, Florida at the Improvs out there. So those will be my last cities for the year, and I'll be off the road in 2024. So if you're anywhere in those areas, come see me before I go on my little hiatus, if you will.
You doing the three shows New Year's Eve?
I'm doing two
at Tampa. Okay,
I'm doing two.
The three shows, the three is last a grind.
It was disastrous in Virginia Beach last.
Tired.
At the Funny Bone at Virginia Beach.
I did the Funny Bone at Virginia Beach New Year's Eve. Disastrous.
Why?
The energy was terrible.
Oh, I get it.
It was terrible. Three, I felt like they wanted to be somewhere else.
Three shows is tough because the last, well, like the first one's earlier than you're used to. It's like six, and then it's like 8:30 or 9, and then you got to get that crowd
full
out.
Food.
Yeah, yeah.
They had full meals, turkey, dressing. They were sluggish.
No,
the itis was there.
No, itis.
I did New Year's Eve at a comedy club that shall remain nameless. I love this club, but they handed out the things you look. People would not, you can't give that to a room full of drunks.
Drunks, yeah.
Right before midnight and
like
expect to have any jokes land.
It's like the whistles on Arrested Development. Okay, we're going to need to get them all back. Mark, where can folks find you? Because I know you got some tour dates coming up.
After you check Tony out in Tacoma, a couple weeks after that, you can come on down to Seattle, Washington, where I'm going to be right before Christmas, the December 22nd, 23rd. In Seattle that weekend, you get tickets at markellis.live. More touring in 2024 because Tony's taking some time off. So I got all the spots.
Get my spots. Get my spots.
The life of a road comedian.
And check out our show On the Street on Rotten Tomatoes. You can find it on social media, Instagram. I've had so much fun. We have a great crew. They give me a microphone and way too much freedom to just roam around the streets of L.A. Hopefully, we get to take that on the road soon.
Yeah.
So if you're around Southern California, you see me on the street, I'm probably asking you about movies. Come hang out. It's a great time.
I love it.
Very similar to that, be sure to check out our new podcast, the Awards Tour Podcast. It's hosted by me. For all of those episodes where you're like, where's Jacqueline? Why is she not here? She's probably doing some awardsy stuff. This podcast can give you guys a peek inside. We have some great interviews coming up. In addition to that, please always email us at Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong. RT is wrong at RottenTomatoes.com. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you find your podcast. And next week, I think it's going to be a fun one, sir. We're going to be going to the place that really kind of birthed me in a lot of ways, although it's not my hometown. It's definitely the town that I spent my formative years.
Oh, yeah. The Legend of Billie Jean.
That is right.
Never seen it?
With a very special guest. But it was filmed in Corpus Christi, Texas. It was like five
Selena
movies that were
country,
filmed there.
Right?
Well, this was...
Selena, right?
This was the Selena country in the non-Selena parts is the best thing.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I can say. This is Corpus Christi of the 70s and early 80s. This is a different time.
So do not put it on expecting some great Tejano music.
Definitely not.
Okay.
We're going with the white trash kids of the lake towns of Corpus Christi, but it's
a
fun ride.
I know a little
ride.
Something about that.
Yeah, it's a fun ride, and we will see you all next time. Again, I want to say on behalf of everyone, our guest Tony Baker, Mr. Mark Ellis, and our producer Brian Perez, thank you all for listening, and we will see you all next time.